Good morning, Connecticut. To our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in on this snowy morning to our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're going to open with an encore play of a recent segment celebrating the $2.7 million and more in grants that were recently awarded to the EPA and the Long Island Sound Futures Fund. We'll not only learn how a few of these key microgrants from that fund are helping preserve and protect Long Island Sound right here along Connecticut's shoreline, but how grants being made as far away as New Hampshire and Vermont are also benefiting the health and environment across our state. Then we'll visit with a spokesperson for the Girl Scouts of Connecticut. Have you ordered your Girl Scout cookies yet? Whether you enjoy a good do-si-do or you have benefited from the talents and leadership of a current or former Girl Scout, February is the perfect time to think about engaging a young woman you know in this global sisterhood, even if they're as young as kindergarten. And did you know that during the 2018 gubernatorial election, a statewide poll found the majority of Connecticut voters believed it was important to reduce the number of people imprisoned in our state? And large majorities supported a specific legislative proposal to reduce incarceration. Well, if you didn't know, stay tuned as we close chatting with the field organizer from the Connecticut chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. And learn about the launch of the ACLU's Smart Justice Initiative that's going to be a key component of this year's state legislative session. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. You know, finding the right talent is often harder than we think, and something that's very timely in terms of businesses here in Connecticut. The workplace, in partnership with the Greater Norwalk Chamber of Commerce, is looking for employers who are interested in discussing their challenges in growing and enhancing their business as it relates to their workforce. The conversation will be about the skills gap and how employers are managing to get the skilled workforce they need. This may include training existing workers, using contractors, hiring new talent, or other options. The goal is to help generate ideas on how the workforce system could be more responsive to employer needs. The gathering is set for 8 a.m. on February 5th at Norwalk City Hall. For information, contact the Norwalk Chamber of Commerce at 203-866-2521 or click on norwalkchamberofcommerce.com. Well, we have an opportunity to touch base with some folks at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and our Office of Jurisdiction, the Long Island Sound Office. Mark Tedesco is on the line with us. He's the director of the EPA's Long Island Sound Office. And also we have Peter Brandt on the line, who's with the Clean Water Division of the office. He may be breaking in to chat a little bit as well, but primarily we'll be talking with Mark Tedesco. Exciting news in recent weeks, a $2.57 million package of grants being awarded across the region with $1.7 million plus in funding from the US EPA coming to Connecticut and the Long Island Sound Futures Fund to help improve the health and ecosystem of Long Island Sound. We talk about Long Island Sound on this program, not only because we're here in Milford, Connecticut, right on the Sound, but the Sound has such important environmental implications, not just to us here in Connecticut and to the folks in Long Island, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, but it really is a sort of a mini environmental engine that has impact on the oceans and seas globally. So it's a critically important piece of real estate, and so glad to hear that these funds are going to be used by so many local organizations and municipalities across the region and Connecticut to support critical conservation projects that benefit the Long Island Sound. So, Mark, thanks again for joining us. Great to talk with you. Hope you're having a good end of the year, and I'm sure you're looking forward to 2019 and all these exciting projects that are lined up. Before we drill into some of the critical and key projects here in Connecticut, let's broaden the focus out to the entire reach of these grants and talk about a couple of things. Maybe, as you mentioned before we went on the air, starting way up at the headwaters of the Connecticut River, which are far outside of our state.
Yeah, that's right, John. And, you know, it's really important. EPA has been very focused working with state partners, local communities, even nonprofit organizations, to really work together to protect and restore Long Island Sound. There's been a lot of progress made. Long Island Sound is cleaner and healthier than it's been in decades. But it's not a job that's going to be accomplished by any one entity alone. And a lot of our effort is really put toward leveraging resources at the federal level, state level, local level, and not just dollars, but also expertise. And so the Long Island Sound Futures Fund is really a way to translate that in very tangible ways. We, through this program, are funding 36 individual projects. That's $2.57 million in federal funds. But it's important that it leverages more than $3 million of state and local funds. So it really increases the total funding available for these on-the-ground conservation projects. And, you know, as you mentioned, when we think about Long Island Sound, obviously the coastline is shared by Connecticut and New York. Those are the most important beneficiaries of a cleaner, healthier Long Island Sound. But the watershed of Long Island Sound, the water through the major rivers, drains a good part of New England. So we also work to involve the states of Massachusetts and Vermont and New Hampshire, because what they do, what goes on in that portion of the watershed will affect the water quality of the Connecticut River or the Thames River or the Housatonic River in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And obviously those rivers drain into Long Island Sound and affect the quality of Long Island Sound as well. So even a project, for example, we through the program providing funds to the town of South Hadley, Massachusetts, and it's a significant grant. It was an award of $145,000, and it's to improve the infrastructure at a wastewater treatment plant that's operated in Chicopee, Massachusetts. And what's critical about this project is that it's going to help that town improve the treatment at that wastewater facility and reduce the amount of nitrogen pollution that they discharge. And that plant discharges to the Housatonic River, which again will affect water quality throughout the Housatonic River in Connecticut and then obviously down into Long Island Sound. So, it's one example of the engagement of this kind of program beyond what we might think of just working within the local waters of Long Island Sound.
Being downstream, mission critical to many of the folks throughout the central and western part of the state. Any other out-of-state projects that, while far afield, actually could have implications on us here in Connecticut?
There are actually a couple of projects working in Vermont, where they're working with farmers to actually be able to apply wastewater that's diverted from treatment to apply it to pasture land. So the farmers get fertilizer that is needed for their pasture land and for agricultural activities. But by doing that, we're diverting the nitrogen pollution that otherwise, in this case, would be discharged to the Connecticut River and then affecting Long Island Sound. So it's a cost-effective and an innovative way of using, in this case, what would be pollution downstream and using it as a resource for local farmers to help grow their pasture land and help support agricultural activities in the watershed.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're about halfway through our chat with Mark Tedesco. He's the director of the EPA's Long Island Sound Office. We are talking about a $2.57 million package of grants that was awarded just a couple of weeks ago that is going to contribute to the EPA's Long Island Sound Futures Fund. We are going to drill into some of the projects that will come as a result of $1.737 million plus awarded here in Connecticut. So, Mark, I want to start with a project that is involving folks from the University of Connecticut and something that's become a little bit of a buzzword in my world over the past few months, and that is addressing the problem of what's called microplastics in Long Island Sound harbors here in Connecticut, Greenwich, Stamford, Darien, and West Haven are involved in this, and it appears the University of Connecticut is going to play an important role in administering this almost $100,000 grant. Can we talk a little bit about that and how bad issues are with microplastics and why we need to be keeping an eye a little bit more acutely on this issue?
Yeah, John, glad you mentioned that one. I'm particularly interested in this project. It's got really just terrific potential. You know, everyone's aware of and concerned about marine debris, you know, garbage and trash on our beaches and shores. You know, it's unsightly. It can be, you know, harmful to economics or, you know, recreational activities. It could be, you know, even a danger for boating. But it's also clear that, you know, when we're talking about plastic material, that often breaks down into little pieces. And even though it may be less visible to the eye, it's still in the environment and can still cause problems, and even directly concern about health problems of having these small pieces of plastic that might be eaten by marine life, for example, or filtered in the water by oysters, for example. And then, of course, in Connecticut, the oyster aquaculture is a really important economic resource, and the quality of Long Island Sound oysters are excellent. And so, you know, making sure that we protect that resource is really critical. So this project it looks at the issue of microplastics by sampling both the water, sediment, and oysters of Long Island Sound. And it'll do it at different locations, from areas that are really highly developed in the west to areas that are a little less developed in the east. So it'll not only document the level of microplastics and whether it's a level to be concerned about, but will also identify the potential sources of those microplastics. Is it coming from a wastewater treatment plant discharge? Is it coming from our stormwater discharges? You know, those kinds of different sources. So, in addition to better defining the extent of the problem, it will also identify the sources that then we can work with, you know, multiple partners to try to address.
Very good. Also, speaking of Greenwich and Stamford harbors, I'd be remiss in not hearkening one of our good friends here on the award-winning For the People, Professor Charlie Yarish up at UConn, by not recognizing the small but potentially potent $38,000 that are being awarded to a Soundwaters bioextraction seaweed farm in Greenwich and Stamford harbors. Can you spend a moment or so just talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Also a project I'm really excited about. You know, we've done a lot of work, and Dr. Yarish has been a national, really an international
global
leader.
Global treasure, really.
On highlighting just research to on economically important, we call them seaweeds, but they can have multiple commercial applications, but they also have the other benefit in that they naturally take up nitrogen. They take up nutrients from the water, and that if the seaweed is harvested from the water, it's a way of literally removing or almost treating the water, removing those nutrients before they can cause problems elsewhere in Long Island Sound.
Yeah. Also exciting that this project is going to involve students and teachers in these communities as well, and the public.
Yeah, and Sound Water is located in Stamford. We're working in Greenwich and Stamford Harbors. And as you say, it's not only a really tangible project in that they'll be working to demonstrate how you can operate these seaweed farms to take up nutrients and leave the surrounding water cleaner, but they'll be working with teachers and students in the actual installation maintenance of the project. So it's a terrific educational opportunity as well, and many of the projects really incorporate that education and involvement aspect.
Excellent.
In addition to the practical benefits of the work that they're doing.
Yeah. One of the other things that we talk about every time we mention Long Island Sound is the precarious and fragile nature of this body of water and the extreme impact that stormwater runoff has on it. But one may not think of stormwater runoff in cities like Hartford or Springfield as being a factor. But here we have 177,000 plus going to something called Bright Green Hartford. So in the last couple minutes that we have with you for this morning's interview, Mark Tedesco, let us know what's cooking up in the capital city.
Yeah, it's another example. In this case, municipalities are so important in efforts to protect the environment, certainly for Long Island Sound. And so this one is working directly with the city of Hartford. We always say if it goes on the ground, it goes in the sound. So if there's anything, whether it's fertilizers or pesticides or litter, stormwater, coming off of residential neighborhoods, particularly, in an example of Hartford, will go into storm drains, it'll get into streams and rivers, in this case, Connecticut River, and it'll affect all the waters downstream, including Long Island Sound. So in this project, the city is going to be working directly with residents to install what we call green infrastructure. So it's a way to reduce the polluted stormwater runoff that would otherwise be a result of runoff from roofs or from paved areas. And they'll do this, a number of ways. They'll create what we call rain gardens to help infiltrate the water into the ground as opposed to running off the streets. They'll be doing more tree planting, so it'll both improve and beautify the neighborhoods and homes, but it will also it's forecast to reduce almost 2 million gallons of stormwater runoff from flowing into the Connecticut River and into Long Island Sound. Instead, having it be infiltrated into the ground where pollutants are filtered. So it's a great project of municipality working with its local community organizations and directly with residents to beautify their communities, reduce pollution, and really educate the larger community in their individual role in helping to protect our environment and clean up Long Island Sound.
Excellent. Well, I really want to thank you for being part of the program this morning. I know There are many, many other projects that are going to be kind of breaking ground or rolling out in the spring, Mark. I'd love for us to maybe identify a location where one of these projects is happening, and maybe come the spring of 2019 or early summer, meet you on site and really drill deeply into and talk to some of the people on the ground who are involved in one of these major projects as a result of these fantastic grants, the Long Island Sound Futures Fund receiving $2.57 million, $1.7 million plus going here to Connecticut to reduce pollution, increase fish diversity and population, and enhance greater understanding of the ecosystem of Long Island Sound. Mark Tedesco is director of the EPA's Long Island Sound Office. Thanks for being on the program this morning, Mark, and we will talk to you, I hope, in the spring. Have a great holiday, and Peter, you as well. Thanks for being on the line. So maybe you haven't gotten your Girl Scout cookies yet. I have. As a matter of fact, I'm already planning an extra hour or two each day on the treadmill to work off all of the cookies I've already eaten. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk at length about Girl Scouts and the great opportunities that it provides, not only for young girls that can participate as young as kindergarten age and up into their late teens and beyond, but also ways for adults out there, even gentlemen, to participate in supporting Girl Scouts of Connecticut. We're so pleased to have Cassandra Mangione on the program this morning. She's a spokesperson for Girl Scouts of Connecticut. And it's a pretty exciting time for Girl Scouts in terms of when you consider the outcome of scouting, whether you're into Girl Scouting for a relatively short period of time or you're in it from kindergarten or very young childhood on up into and through your teens. The end result is that you're going to exit the program at whatever point you do with skills that will help you not only represent yourself better as a woman, but also with leadership qualities. And some very interesting stats that I learned regarding Girl Scouting is, and they're pretty amazing, that 17 out of the 23 women in the current U.S. Senate are Girl Scout alum, and almost 6 out of 10 women that are representatives and delegates in the House of Representatives in Washington are Girl Scout alum, including our own Johanna Hayes, the first African-American woman from Connecticut elected to Congress, and my U.S. Congresswoman. So it's pretty exciting times for Girl Scouts, Cassandra.
It definitely is. And we've been doing this for almost 107 years, so we're very excited to enter another year of Girl Scouting and providing girls the best leadership experience.
Now's the time that you're holding kind of orientation activities and recruitment. But before we talk a little bit about that, Cassandra, let's talk about some of the research and statistics that you have in relation to what we had already kind of mentioned, and that is how Girl Scouts mean or being involved with Girl Scouts means that you're getting involved in a program, perhaps one of the ultimate programs to promote leadership.
Right. John, yeah, you brought up some great points that it's also never too late to get involved in Girl Scouting. Right now we are in heavy recruitment season right now, recruiting Girl Scout Daisy, so kindergarten and first grade, but it's never too late to join. We offer girls the best girl leadership experience in the world. We have time-tested methods and research-backed programs that speak to the strengths of girl leadership development. So when you go to our website at gsofct.org and look at the activities, all girls are invited to participate in our activities and sign up. It's winter, so we offer a lot of outdoor programming as well as STEM programming at the Connecticut Science Center, Discovery Center down in Bridgeport. So there's tons of things for girls to do. So through our Girl Scout Leadership Experience, we offer a one-of-a-kind leadership development program. And research finds that compared to women who weren't Girl Scouts, we're talking a lot about a Girl Scout alum, especially right now in our 116th Congress, where 60% of the women are Girl Scout alum. Girls who weren't Girl Scouts compared to girls that were, there is a huge difference. They have more successful careers. They enjoy higher household income, personal income. They're more active as mentors and community volunteers. They are regular voters. They are civic-minded. They're really out in the community making a difference their whole lives.
We also hear a lot about how being part of a certain university or a certain area of government or the military breeds a sort of club of individuals who look out for each other, who help each other, who employ each other, who become friends or mentors to each other. And Girl Scouts is really the same way as it's been described by your CEO, Mary Barnaby. Girl Scouts, once you join, and no matter how long you're affiliated with it, from being a brownie to a full-fledged scout and beyond, you're part of a global sisterhood that
Absolutely.
Really explores, that has the opportunity to explore throughout their Girl Scouting career a lot of opportunities. Before we went on the air this morning, you were talking about a few, including the all-important STEM initiatives, which we talk about almost exhaustively on the award-winning For the People here. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that Girl Scouts get the opportunity to do and to kind of test the waters on, because a lot of them move on to careers based on things that they first experienced even as young as kindergarten, first, second, third grade in the Girl Scouts.
That's right. So one of my favorite moments is when we're at older events with adults and we ask around the room, raise your hand if you were a Girl Scout, and almost every hand in the room goes up of women who are Girl Scout alum, and these are prominent businesswomen and dignitaries across the state. So it really does stick with you. You're right, it's a sisterhood. You take those skills that you learn with you mm-hmm. where you go in your future. So at Girl Scouts of Connecticut, we welcome all girls K through 12, and right now we serve over 26,000 girls and over 12,000 adults in the state. And we have the Girl Scout Leadership Experience. And under there are four core program pillars, which are the outdoors, STEM, entrepreneurship, and life skills. And outdoors is ranging from our summer camp right now. We're going to open registration soon for our summer camps. We have summer camps across the state so girls can come and learn leadership skills and have a summer of a lifetime making new friends. We have STEM programming. So we serve more than 7,500 girls every year in our STEM programming, including robotics. We've had over 100 teams in 8 years, 3 national winners in our rocketry programs, astronomy, engineering, coding, marine biology. And one thing that we implemented is a cybersecurity program, which is definitely an underrepresented area for girls. Girls pursue STEM badges, and they really just immerse themselves in science, technology, engineering, and math and learn those skills that maybe they'd learn in school, but they have more time to hone in on those subjects.
Yeah, and it's a big week for you, Cassandra, and the Girl Scouts of Connecticut, because as we broadcast this program on Sunday the 20th, your camp registration opens up this coming Tuesday, January 22nd, and tomorrow there's a bunch of stuff going on, including something called Brownie Greenhouse Scientists and something called the Polar Adventure. And then later in the week on Wednesday at JFK Elementary School and at the Pequannock School, there are upcoming recruitment sessions.
Right. So in terms of the outdoors, I mean, and all of that, hopefully the weather is good this weekend mm-hmm. so girls can go outside and enjoy it. But, you know, for the environmental, we're teaching girls as young as in second grade to appreciate the environment and learn how to take care of it. They grow as environmental stewards throughout their career in Girl Scouting through different programming.
Very good. And how about in terms of entrepreneurship? This is something that is huge. We found out even in programs as recently as a few weeks ago here on For the People that there is a huge growing interest among younger people in this, what we're so-called gig economy, to enter into a career that they have sort of molded and crafted out of their own passions and strengths. Let's just touch upon what Girl Scouts will experience in the entrepreneurship track.
Sure. So for over a century, financial literacy has been a cornerstone of the Girl Scout leadership experience. And we have about 23% of our 132 Girl Scout badges requiring financial literacy skills. So girls will earn those badges throughout their journey as a Girl Scout, along with, as you know, we have the Girl Scout Cookie Program, which is one of the biggest entrepreneurial programs for girls in the world, where they are introduced to the five skills as young as 5 years old. And those key five skills are goal setting, business ethics, money management, people skills, and decision making. And those are key skills that girls will take with them every corner, everything that they experience in their lives, setting goals, setting achievable goals, learning how to manage money, learning how to talk with people and then talk about their product, ask them to support them, making decisions as a group. It's very girl-led, so where they're going to sell their cookies, what they're going to do with their cookie proceeds that they earn through the cookie program, that they use their proceeds to do amazing things, go on adventures, go on trips, make a sustainable change in their community. So entrepreneurship is a pillar in our program.
Excellent. Well, we're speaking with Cassandra Mangione with the Girl Scouts of Connecticut, folks. We're going to come back and talk about why, if you're thinking about maybe where your daughter, granddaughter, a girl that you love is maybe going to go with college or a career when they're as young as pre-K or kindergarten. Well, we're going to talk about getting them on the fast track to making those right decisions by joining the Girl Scout Daisy program, even if they're as young as kindergarten age. We'll be back with Cassandra Mangione of Girl Scouts of Connecticut right after this quick break. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes across the state that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. January is National Radon Action Month, and your state and local health departments urge you to learn more about radon, a leading cause of lung cancer, and test for radon in your home. Radon levels vary throughout Connecticut, and because you cannot see, taste, or smell radon, the only way to tell if you have a radon problem in your home is to test for it. Testing involves placing a small device in your home for about 48 hours and then sending the device to a lab for results. Kits are available from the American Lung Association. You can also get testing kits at your local hardware store or through many local health departments. Learn more at ct.gov/dph/radon. We're back with Cassandra Mangione. She's with Girl Scouts of Connecticut. And hey, if you're looking for a place for your kindergartner or first grader to shine as a Girl Scout Daisy, you can watch her unleash her inner strength. And Cassandra Mangione, I'm looking here at your kind of tagline for this year's recruitment program, which is Unleash Her Girl, with the girl standing for go-getter, innovator, risk-taker, and leader. Let's talk about why some of the most successful adults who are former Girl Scouts started as Daisies as young as kindergarten or first grade.
So You brought up a new tagline for us, which is GIRL, which does stand for go-getter, innovator, risk-taker, and leader. And these are essences that girls gain. Every Girl Scout, once they start as a Daisy, represents four of those things. They are bold. They are driven. They come up with new ideas. They are problem solvers. They take healthy risks. They know it's okay to fail. Even if they try it, it's worth learning something from it. And they build leadership skills, and they lead with empathy. So these are four key things that girls learn, and they take it with them throughout the Girl Scout journey.
Well, while there are undoubtedly many men out there that have made a volunteer contributions in some way to sustain or support a scout in their own family, scouts in their neighborhood or in their community, for the most part, Girl Scouts are all girl and girl led in a girl friendly environment. And that means making lifelong friendships that sometimes, I mean, you talked about how you go into a room where you're recruiting and there's a lot of adult women and you ask how many were scouts, and inevitably almost all of them raise their hand. But I mean, I've had experiences where I've come across women in senior environments and senior communities that are in their 80s who met when they were in Girl Scouts as elementary school cohorts or children. The Girl Scouts is really a place to form lifelong friendships.
That's right, yeah. And just so you know, we do have male volunteers, so mm-hmm. If men want to volunteer, absolutely, please. We welcome everybody to come join us. And our main focus is the girl, and it is girl-led from as young as 5 years old. They decide what they want to do with their troop. If they want to help support a local animal shelter, they will do that. If they want to earn certain badges, they will work together and do that. And from a young age, they are choosing what they want to do. They are in a troop that is a safe space where they can, you know, try new things, develop a range of skills, take on those leadership roles, and feel comfortable failing, dusting themselves off, and trying again. So girls really do take the lead. It's something that they always do. And as they get older, they may get some guidance from their troop leaders when they're younger. But as they get older, the leaders take a step back and watch as the girls unleash their strengths and their skills and their passions and really make the most out of their Girl Scout experience.
Very good. Hey, folks, we've got a few minutes left with Cassandra Mangione of Girl Scouts of Connecticut. We're going to get into a couple more important points before we move on to our final segment. Cassandra, talk to us a little bit about the criteria to join Girl Scouts. As we said, right now you're recruiting even down to the kindergarten age. Let's talk about what folks need to know if they want to jump in and maybe give Girl Scouts a try.
Sure. Like I said earlier, all girls K through 12 are welcome to join. If you go to our website at gsofct.org, and you click on join, you are able to join a troop, or girls can join individually and start signing up for activities and getting involved that way. We definitely always ask for more volunteers. The volunteers are the blood of our movement. They are what makes Girl Scouting happen in Connecticut. So if we have adults out there who are inspired and want to change the life of girls in Connecticut, please come join us. And they can get started, you know, right away, get signing up for activities and events. And they can bring a friend, too, to show their friends, you know, how much fun they're having in Girl Scouts.
And that's a great idea and a great way for kids to be a little bit more comfortable, maybe, instead of just entering, especially the little ones, walking into that
right.
environment,
yeah.
Bring a friend. So,
bring a friend.
As I still can taste this morning's dose of do-si-dos, let's finish our chat this morning by reminding folks that as of just a couple of days ago, Girl Scout cookie season has opened, and and folks are out there aiming to try to balance their hunger for these selection of Girl Scout cookies. Let people know how they can go about getting their box, their case, or their truckload of Girl Scout cookies for 2019.
Right. So yes, Girl Scouts are selling cookies right now. They're taking their, you know, taking your orders. So again, if you go to our website at gsofct.org, if you are not approached by a Girl Scout, you know, the girls sell the cookies. So if you want to buy cookies, but you haven't been approached by a Girl Scout yet, if you contact us through our website, we will hook you up with a Girl Scout who will can take your order for Girl Scout cookies. And in March is when we start our booth sales. So after the first weekend in March, get ready to see the girls out in front of their grocery stores and other community centers selling those delicious Girl Scout cookies.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think is important to say, because people are, you know, a little bit diet conscious, we don't want the Girl Scout cookies and their resistance to enjoy them to stand in the way of folks supporting Girl Scouts. We want to remind them that as they encounter Girl Scouts and their adult leaders or folks who are volunteering and working with them, if they want to just reach in their pocket and make a dollar or $5, $10, or $20 donation and not even get the cookies, it's important for those folks to know that that money is going to a good cause, even if they're not using it to buy cookies.
And something they can also do is we have a gift of caring program called Cookies for Heroes, where if you want to support Girl Scouts, but you don't want to consume the cookies yourself, you are able to donate cookies to troops overseas and veterans at home. So if you don't want to purchase cookies, you can ask a girl to support Cookies for Heroes.
Excellent. GSOFCT, Girl Scouts of Connecticut. GSOFCT.org is their website. With nearly 39,000 members and over 26,000 girls and over 12,000 adults across Connecticut, Girl Scouts are part of a sisterhood of over 2.6 million strong around the globe. Is it time for a young lady that you know or love to start Girl Scouts? Well, they're recruiting as young as kindergarten for their DAISY program now. Just visit their website, gsofct.org, for more information. And Cassandra Maggione, thank you for representing Girl Scouts of Connecticut this morning on our program. We appreciate having you. And I'm going to run out before my coworkers finish eating my cookies. So thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to talk with you.
All right. We talk quite a lot about putting folks back into society successfully and helping them engage with the workforce from incarceration. And today is no different. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union of Connecticut's Smart Justice Initiative, is led by formerly incarcerated people, and it's a campaign dedicated to ending mass incarceration and eliminating racial disparities in the justice system. As we speak with our guest this morning, Gus Marks Hamilton, will be broadcasting this a few days after a press conference, but it's kind of a weird dynamic because we're taping the program just about an hour before he goes into the press conference. So we're sort of in this weird time warp here where we're going to be talking about something that's happening in the future as we tape it, but a few days in the past as people hear about it. So Gus, welcome to the program. Gus Marks Hamilton is with the Smart Justice Initiative. He's a field organizer. So Gus, let's tell me a little bit about yourself real quick and how you got engaged with this. It's only been a few months, but you kind of hit the ground running with the ACLU of Connecticut, jumping right in up in the campaigns and initiatives leading up to the governor, Governor Ned Lamont, taking office last week.
Well, thank you initially, John, for having me on your program. I've been interested in criminal justice issues for a number of years. Firstly, as somebody who was formerly incarcerated, since I got out, I was able to attend a graduate program and graduated with a master's degree in social work. And I'm interested in, you know, bringing reform to the criminal justice system, not here in Connecticut, but across the country. And that's been, I think, reflected in a lot of the reforms that have been going on, the awareness that incarcerating people is not good for society. It's not good for the people that are incarcerated. The vast majority of people who are in prison will be coming out at some point, and they'll be rejoining their communities. And it's in the best interest of everyone in the state of Connecticut, everyone across the country, to make sure that people who have been formerly incarcerated become productive, successful, and responsible citizens.
It is somewhat of a niche interest, but no matter where you're from, Gus, I have to imagine that people in Connecticut, for the most part, don't realize how everyone else, even outside the United States, looks at Connecticut for having set the bar in so many ways in terms of the way folks coming out of incarceration can successfully reenter their lives.
Well, part of the work we're working on right now is that reintegration part. Mm-hmm. Connecticut has made significant decreases in its prison population. You know, about 8 years ago, Connecticut's prison population was over 20,000 people. I mean, compared to the overall population of the state, it was one of the largest in the country. But since then, since about 2010, 2011, today, the prison population is about 13,500 people, so that's almost a third in the reduction of the prison population that's been able to happen. And that has been simultaneously seen as the crime rate in the state is at the lowest it's been since the early to mid-1970s. Mm-hmm. So I think people generally realize that, you know, simply releasing people is not necessarily going to lead to any public safety issues. But at the same time, now we need to work on the people that are, who have been incarcerated. There are over 40,000 people in the state of Connecticut who are on parole or on probation. And these people need to be able to become successful, productive citizens in order to make our state stronger and safer.
Mm. In your capacity and in your interaction with lawmakers and perhaps even Governor-elect Ned Lamont prior to his taking office last week, did you get the feeling that he may not only pick up the baton from where our former Governor Malloy left off in terms of these improvements and the Smart Justice Initiative, or perhaps even Governor Lamont has some ideas that he shared with the ACLU or even you yourself about other directions he wants to go in or even ways to improve what we have now?
Governor Malloy, in the 8 years that he was governor, made a lot of changes in the way criminal justice is looked at. A lot of people in his administration did a lot of work on criminal justice reform. But when we interacted with you know, then candidate Ned Lamont over the summer and the fall, what we realized was even though he was open to talking about criminal justice, he had no he didn't know very much about the system at the beginning. He didn't really have any ideas in terms of how to carry forward some of the reform work that the previous administration had done. So when we met with him beginning in August, we met with him, we met with some of his policy people. When he won the election in November, he set up his transition teams, and one of them was a transition team exclusively centered on criminal justice policy. So we feel like the Governor Lamont has come a long way in terms of not having a criminal justice policy platform at all to finally publishing one and then making it an important part of his administration going forward. I think he realizes that what's good for people that have been formerly incarcerated, people that have been justice impacted, is not just better for them in terms of helping them turn their lives around and become, you know, good citizens for the state of Connecticut. It's good for the entire state.
Yes, because you not only don't want that that cost drain of the incarcerated individual,
absolutely,
which who is not contributing at all, but is a real burden on Connecticut taxpayers. You want that to flip all the way in the other direction, and you want them to not only be happy, contributing members of their community, but contributing taxpayers here in Connecticut and contributors to our workforce.
Yeah, I think there's no debate about the cost of incarcerating somebody. You know, the estimates kind of vary all over the place, but it's about $53,000 a year to incarcerate one person in the state of Connecticut. The Department of Corrections budget has ballooned over the last 20 to 30 years as mass incarceration has grown. It makes a lot more sense to, rather than incarcerate somebody where they're not a taxpaying citizen, they're not contributing anything to the state's economy, it makes a lot more sense for that person to be out in the community, to have a job, to have secure housing. That's one of the goals of the Smart Justice campaign.
Excellent. Folks, we're about halfway, just a little past our halfway mark with our chat with Gus Marks Hamilton. He is a Smart Justice field organizer with the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU of Connecticut, just about to go into a press conference, which you undoubtedly have heard about up until when we broadcast this program on Sunday morning. So a part of what's going to be on the agenda today for the press conference, Gus, is legislative priorities and some ideas and advocacy. In the last few minutes that we have with you, can we run down a few of the key points, particularly maybe some of the ones that you feel have gotten some interest and some energy behind them in past sessions that maybe are poised to turn the corner and become a law or policy in 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. There's two legislative priorities that we're particularly focused on for this session, and they kind of are at both ends of the criminal justice system. One is looking at transparency out of the state's attorney's office. In Connecticut, state's attorneys are not elected, as they are in most other states around the country. They're appointed by the Criminal Justice Commission, but there's not a whole lot of information that comes out of the Division of Criminal Justice. So the first legislative priority we have is hoping to get some data. It's sort of a data collection bill. Everything when it comes to the demographics of people that are incarcerated, people are convicted of felonies and misdemeanors, trying to break down some of the plea deals that they receive, who receives bail, the sentences that they end up serving. The second bill is sort of a more broader bill looking at anti-discrimination for people who have been convicted of a crime, whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor in Connecticut, and trying to, people that have been convicted of a crime, people who are living with a criminal record, face hundreds of legal barriers in the state when it comes to access to affordable housing, when it comes to education, insurance and credit. I don't think a lot of people know about those. So the anti-discrimination bill would try to level the playing field so the people who are justice impacted or people who are living with a criminal record will be able to get their lives back on track.
Very good. And what are some of the other ideas that the ACLU will be advocating to lawmakers to begin thinking about this year? Any other longer term plans or perhaps even some initiatives that may have been introduced in the past and then sort of were deprioritized? Anything that you might be bringing back?
Well, I can talk to what the Smart Justice campaign is trying to do. The Smart Justice campaign, we're not just focused on this legislative session. We understand that the criminal justice system, I mean, there's been a lot of work. I mean, Connecticut has been doing a lot of work, reform work over the last 8 years, and we don't anticipate that everything can be solved in a single legislative session. We look at the Smart Justice campaign as something that's going to be going on for a long time. So, I mean, the two bills, the anti-discrimination bill and the prosecutorial transparency bill, those are our focus for this legislative session. But we certainly anticipate that going forward over the next few years, there's a lot of work that we can do.
Very good. Is there some way that residents can engage in this initiative? Because ultimately, the fastest way to move lawmakers toward the water and make them drink is to be sure that they know that their constituents want them to deliver something.
Oh, I like that metaphor a lot. But yeah, our website, the Smart Justice Campaign, is a big part of the ACLU's website. That's ACLUCT.org. We have a petition on the website that people can sign. We have a lot of we have fact sheets about the campaign. We have a blogs that we write, that we talk about some of the work we've been doing over the last 6 months or so. People can follow us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I mean, yeah, we're all over the place. So we'd encourage people to get involved with the campaign we're working on. And, you know, like I said, our goal is to make Connecticut safer and stronger for everyone. That's just not people that are formerly incarcerated or people that are living with a criminal record. We believe everyone in the state of Connecticut is just as impacted, whether you're a taxpayer, whether you're a family member of someone who has a criminal record. We believe everyone in the state of Connecticut should be involved in this.
Well, when you consider that shocking per person number that you quoted a little bit earlier as how much it costs our taxpayers for every single individual who is incarcerated in the state,
even
when you consider that last year Connecticut incarcerated the fewest people in almost a quarter century and reported the lowest crime rate, there are still a lot of cost points occupying rooms and beds in correctional facilities here in Connecticut and outside the state. So we wish you well with the Smart Justice Program, folks. We're talking with Gus Marks Hamilton. During the 2018 gubernatorial election, a statewide poll found the majority of Connecticut voters believed it was important to reduce the number of people imprisoned in the state, and large majorities supported specific legislative proposals to reduce incarceration. Connecticut's chapter of the ACLU is going to be working on that starting shortly after we hang up the phone with our guest this morning, and throughout the legislative session. We'll look forward to talking with you, Gus, and folks from the ACLU about further successes as the session develops. Thanks for being part of our program this morning. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.